Welcome to Big Nerdy Questions, the Halloween special. We initially thought we would ask the question, who has the best laugh in Hollywood history? But the answer is Vincent Price, and there's not even a discussion. So we thought of a different question that's a little bit better. So tonight's big nerdy question for the Halloween special is, what is the best Simpsons Treehouse of Horror segment? So, all you Simpsons fans, get ready to relive some amazing moments over the past 27 years. I should note that we're recording this before the airing of Treehouse of Horror 27, so we do not have anything to say about the 2016 special. Maybe we'll have to amend our lists. But I should introduce my co-panelists. Joining me tonight is the number one Simpsons fan in all of B&Q land, Josh P. Welcome back.
You should know that no grave would ever keep me.
See, I believe that Josh P. is SMRT, especially when it comes to The Simpsons, so we should have a fantastic show for you tonight. Matt is not here, so there's no sponsor, unfortunately, but it's the Halloween special. We don't need no stinking monster or sponsor or whatever.
Or badges.
We don't need anything. We can just get the zombie Kaiser Wilhelm to help us run our episode. Yeehaw. And we're going to be quoting a lot tonight. So obviously spoilers for the Treehouses of Horror, but you've seen these, right? Obviously you've had to have seen these at some point in your life. If you haven't, please go out, get The Simpsons, and watch them. Watch them on FXX, find a way, because The Simpsons is probably one of the best comedy series in television history. And this is our tribute to it, but also our Halloween spectacular. But as with any other episode, we have a big nerdy recommendation. And since The Simpsons is the subject of the day, my big nerdy recommendation is one of the first video games on the Xbox that I ever 100%ed, The Simpsons Hit and Run. So if you combine Crazy Taxi with Grand Theft Auto with The Simpsons, you get The Simpsons Hit and Run. You get to drive around on several different open world maps of Springfield that actually tell you where the landmarks are in relation to each other, which is one of the nicest parts of playing the game.
Absolutely.
You get to see the comic book store, the retirement castle, Springfield Elementary, the docks. You name it, if it's in The Simpsons, it's probably in that game. There are structures in that game that are only in one episode, but show up. You can drive through the Stonecutter's Tunnel under the nuclear power plant.
Yes.
Which is one of the best things in the whole game. The missions are funny. The storyline is actually really good. I'm not going to spoil it. It's one of the better constructed storylines, and they probably could have used that storyline for The Simpsons movie if they would have so chosen to. It's a great game. It controls fantastically. I think it's the best game based on The Simpsons to date. I'm sorry, Simpsons Wrestling. I know you're fantastic. but The Simpsons Hit and Run is my pick. And Josh, have you played this game?
Absolutely. I do not remember if I 100%ed it or not, but I played a lot of hours of it. And I absolutely love the episodic flow. And not only that, but you can revisit previous episodes if you just wanted to just go back and mess around, which is perfect because one of the episodes is an entire Treehouse of Horror themed episode.
It is, and it's perfect. And you can actually play the episodes with other characters in other cars.
So correct.
One of the coolest things about the game is you can unlock cars that are in jokes to various things throughout the show's history, like the Canyonero or the Homermobile.
The Electaurus.
Yes.
Bart's soapbox car that for some reason has an engine in it.
Yeah, so there you can even drive the Springfield Elementary school bus.
Absolutely.
So there's so many things in this game. It's amazing. And Apu is one of the playable characters.
Yes, he is.
So you play as the entire Simpsons family, minus Maggie, although she is with Marge. And you also play with Apu. But you can get vehicles from pretty much anyone in the Springfield Pantheon, which is fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
And Ned is a bomb shelter, I think. I didn't know that until I played the game. I'm sure they've been mentioned in the show, but...
Right. That episode of The Simpsons, as punishment, Principal Skinner was taking Bart out really early in the morning just to look at stars through a telescope because Principal Skinner wanted to discover a new star or something. I can't remember what that part, but Bart discovers a comet just by spinning the telescope around randomly and pointing it at something.
It's apocalyptic because it thinks it's on the way for Earth. Yeah.
Yes, and it was. It was absolutely on the way to Earth, but... So yeah, Ned had the bomb shelter. He was the only person in town that was that level of prepared, and he ended up getting kicked out of it because he was deemed the least essential person in town.
Poor Ned Flanders.
But they feel really bad about it, and so they all go back out to join Ned in singing in whatever song it was he was singing. And then all of a sudden the comet comes in and then just like burns in the Earth's atmosphere, and when it hits the ground, it's the size of a piece of gravel. which, by the way, Homer called that.
Homer is the idiot savant of all things physics, which I think is a great segue to the first one I want to talk about. And we're just going to go here and talk about segments. I want to make it clear we're not talking about whole episodes, because I think the segments themselves are more iconic, and typically the segments don't have a relationship with each other. There may be wraparound segments because of some sort of structure, like in the episode where they're all telling stories or they're all at the party. Right.
Or they're all having different nightmares.
Exactly. But they don't relate to each other in any other way. So we're going to talk about individual segments. And the first ones, we're talking about Homer as a physics idiot savant. We have to talk about the time that Homer Simpson tried to repair a toaster and created a time machine.
Man, you're going right into it. I like this.
Our first one is Time and Punishment. It is from Treehouse of Horror number 5, I believe, 1994, written by Greg Daniels and Dan McGrath. So the Time and Punishment is based on the Ray Bradbury work, A Sound of Thunder. And it is based on the idea that going back in the past and changing one minuscule thing can have massive consequences. But leave it to the Simpsons to take that to the most absurd places possible. The best moments of this segment, in my opinion, you have a universe where Ned Flanders has become the Big Brother type dictator, where everyone has to wear Ned and Maude's outfits. Everyone has lobotomies to think like Ned and be positive like Ned. That explains why he's always so happy. So that's a quite a nightmarish scenario. We have the perfect world where Homer lives in a mansion, his kids are polite, and Bart is smart, and he leaves because there's no such thing as donuts. But once he leaves, the donuts are raining in the background. So
falling out of the sky.
You got to feel bad for Homer in this one. The universe that he finally ends up in at the end, where it seems normal, except his kids have long forked tongues, and he's like, it's okay, I'll take it. And of course, the best moment of all, Josh, I'm going to let you recite it because you have a great accent. When Maggie shows up out of nowhere and she says...
After the gag of the episode is Willie shows up to try to help, yes, and he always gets an axe in the back. And in each, yes, of the three stories, Maggie delivers the axe into Groundskeeper Willie's back, and then just pops her pacifier out, and it's James Earl Jones saying, "This is indeed a disturbing universe."
So I love this segment. As a sci-fi fan, I think it's probably one of the best time travel series stories I've ever seen. Yeah. It really gets into the absurdity of what can happen. And, of course, you don't put Lisa in this because she would actually think it out. You put Homer, who at one point gets so upset that he's like, "You tell me not to hit anything, I'll hit everything!" It's fantastic! What do you think about Time and Punishment?
It's so wonderful. And again, just the level of Homer's stupidity. The first time he goes back, he says... He says, "Wow, I'm back in the time before dinosaurs were only confined to zoos."
Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah. And then of course, because it's Homer and Marge, like, because it's Grandpa Simpson, that would be his wedding day advice. "Son, if you ever go back in time, don't touch anything."
I feel like Abe Simpson would say that for no good reason, just because he's Abe Simpson.
Oh, of course, yeah. You know, like, back in the day, we used to have sandwiches used to be called flatbreadies, and they cost 4 playing cards a bite, you know?
I think he's the walking non sequitur of the show.
Of course.
When they have a line they want to throw in that has no other place, they're like, "Okay, bring in Grandpa." "We have to add 2 more minutes. Grandpa story." No.
My favorite one is when it just every so often, like once every few years, he'll say one and then it's followed by, "That one actually makes sense. Look it up."
I feel like they should, in the next Simpsons game, there should be a challenge where you have to listen to a QuickTime event of Grandpa Simpson and respond with enough stuff to keep him going long enough to defuse a bomb. Like, prompt him something that's completely unrelated to keep him talking. It would be a fantastic minigame.
It would be. That would be pretty fantastic. I also gotta give them props for the cameo of Peabody and Sherman as well.
Yes.
Can I forget that?
And that, you know, but I think make the point that the Treehouses of Horror are a place where they do a lot of allusions that wouldn't otherwise fit in a normal episode. They do a lot of tributes to Treehouse of Horror, a lot of parodies, and a lot of mentions of other works that wouldn't make sense in a typical canon. Which is
correct.
A great way to use Treehouse of Horror.
Right.
So, Josh, what is your first pick of today's group?
I'm going to actually start with one that's not, it's definitely not funny, really, at all. But you got to go back to kind of where it all began. And I think what made the Treehouse of Horror / Halloween specials so great was in the first one, the very final story, where they reenacted The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe. It's like I said, it's not really funny at all. I mean, it is kind of funny watching Homer run around chasing the raven with a broom, but not only is it a very good artistic visual rendition of the raven, which it had quite possibly never been done before in history, it also plays very perfectly as the actual relationship that Bart and Homer have as father and son. I mean, Homer is an unlucky fool, and Bart is the bane of his entire existence every time he's around him. So, and I mean, just hearing Bart go, "Nevermore, nevermore." I think that work alone is why the Treehouse of Horror became what it is today.
Yeah, I agree. And when he's saying "nevermore," you can just picture the Raven saying, "Don't have a cow, man."
Yeah,
or
exactly.
"Eat my shorts," or whatever Bart's normal catchphrases are. Because you're spot on. The relationship between those two characters is exactly the same in The Raven and in The Simpsons more generally. And Sam Simon did a fantastic job choosing The Raven to base one of the segments off of. It's an inspired idea. And also, we're 2 for 2 for James Earl Jones.
Isn't he the
narrator of this?
You might be right. I did not actually look that up before I started the show.
Yes, he is. I just looked that up. Yes, he is. It sounded like him. He's the narrator of it. He's actually in all three segments in this particular episode, the first one, but he's the narrator of The Raven. So, yeah, perfect. I mean, what a great choice. And they actually gave Edgar Allan Poe a writing credit on that episode.
Yeah, they did. I forgot about that. That's true.
And if I remember correctly, I actually watched this in high school English class. I think my teacher showed this.
Of course.
Yeah.
It's very tasteful. It's not like most of the other Halloween specials by The Simpsons where there's so much blood and guts in a lot of them. But see, now you said that, it just got me thinking, where did I hear James Earl Jones and the other two from that episode? And I just remember the bad dream house, the very first one. He's the guy that goes, "Okay," when Marge just yells at the spirits to make them stop. It's the most Marge Simpson way of ending it, for sure.
I mean, it's almost like that sort of a low-key cameo is like when South Park had George Clooney on, and he only was the voice of the cat, and he meowed, and that was his entire role, was the meow of Cartman's cat.
Right.
So, leave it to The Simpsons to pull off something like that.
Of course. So, what would you like to talk about next, Josh?
Let's see. There are so many good ones. I think I want to go to actually a more recent one. I think I want to bring up The Day the Earth Looks Stupid,
which is
from Treehouse of Horror 17 in 2006, and it is the Simpsons parody of War of the Worlds. And if you aren't familiar with War of the Worlds, Orson Welles adapted the classic H.G. Wells work back in the 30s. And the story goes that people actually believed that War of the Worlds wasn't a fictional piece and it was true news. And it caused a bit of a panic because people thought that Martians really were invading Earth.
He did say in the beginning that this is a fictional broadcast, but it was the people who tuned in late to the radio broadcast of that show that got freaked out and actually caused the mass hysteria.
Yes, but in this Simpsons parody, it's a little bit different. They still use the War of the Worlds. They're rebroadcasting the old broadcast. And panic, of course, breaks out because it's Springfield. And Everyone thinks it's a hoax, but then King and Kodo show up and actually invade because the town thinks that it's still just a hoax.
That's perfect.
Which is a great twist on it. And interestingly enough, this was actually written in 2006, I think I said. And it was written as a parody of not just of the War of the Worlds, but as a commentary on the Iraq War and buying into mass hysteria, apparently. And they initially had a line in it where they said weapons of mass disintegration as an overt reference to Iraq, and they took it out from the final broadcast because they didn't want it to be that obvious. Yes, so and, The Simpsons gets political, but it's all, even as it is, it's a fantastic takeoff on one of the most classic science fiction stories ever written.
Right, definitely. And absolutely wonderful, wonderful voice acting by Maurice LaMarche playing the role of Orson Welles. I still remember when it turned out that the alien invasion was true, Orson Welles, they asked him how it feels, and he just says, "Well, I must admit it is quite unpleasant." That's pretty much the only line that I remember from that entire sequence.
That line makes the whole episode.
Yeah, I know, and like he does that, and that's exactly the same voice as the Brain from Pinky and the Brain, and it's just hard to believe that man also voiced Zap Brannigan.
Wow, what a fantastic actor!
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Now, if I remember correctly, isn't this episode drawn in sepia tone? This particular segment?
Yes, it is. You're right.
Which adds a different element to it, makes it certainly feel like the 30s, and there's some great scenes of Chief Wiggum being constantly fooled and losing his brain, but sadly, Wiggum losing his brain doesn't actually change much of anything.
No. They all acted like animals to try to distract the aliens, too. That's...
Oh man.
So yeah, it's pretty funny, but also definitely a good artistic piece, just like the Raven.
Yeah. And I think they always try to put at least one segment in each Treehouse episode that really taxes them in animation or adaptation. There's always one at least that takes them out of their comfort zone completely, and usually that is the one that stands out the most.
It's true.
You know, and I think there's going to be some others that I'm thinking of that I'm going to bring up later that fit that description. So what's your next nominee, Josh?
The next one that I would like to talk about, while we're sticking with artistic masterpieces, King Homer from Treehouse of Horror 3. King Homer is one of my early favorites for sure. Not just because, I mean, come on, it makes fun of King Kong and Homer's like the perfect guy to be a giant mindless ape. but it's actually a very well done remake retelling of the movie King Kong in 8 minutes.
Yeah, in 8 minutes they pull off the entire plot of the film, which says something about the editing of the original piece.
Yeah, it's like the original piece is over 2 hours long, and most of that time is on the boat heading to the island in the first place.
So, Lord of the Rings, oh.
Oh.
Sorry about that, folks. but the use of Mr. Burns in this episode, I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course it's Burns that's doing all this, wants to bring the giant and use him for making money and stage productions. Of course it is, right? It's the same guy who's going to block the sun. It's the guy that is going to go and find, this ape and bring him back to Springfield. And I think it's fair to say Burns actually doesn't show up in as many treehouses as you might expect. So I like seeing him in this one. I
mean, he always makes an appearance every time. It's just he's not in all of the sequences.
No, and he's not usually one of the major characters in the treehouse segments.
Hardly ever. I think the only real big one that comes to my mind where I'd say he's a main character is the one where he's Dracula.
Yeah, I think that's the only one that I can think of too.
Yeah, I wouldn't even quite call him a main character in the number two. They weren't named. That's why I don't. Mm-hmm. that's why I don't know the name of it. It didn't have a name. Homer's Nightmare from Treehouse of Horror 2, where he gets his brain cut out of his head and put into a robot.
Yes.
I might call him a main character in that.
Yeah, the early episodes. But I think mm-hmm. Burns was also used more in the early years than he is now overall.
Just in general, yeah.
In general, yeah. Which is a shame because I think he's one of the best characters on the show.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see what happens this year. Maybe he'll be one of the main characters. but yeah, I love King Homer. And the mm-hmm. wedding at the end, of course, it's Homer and Marge. True love always wins.
Absolutely.
Even if there's a guy who's offering you a great bowling ball and breakfast. So I'm going to put my next nominee up. And speaking of, you know, things that are kind of political, because I was just thinking why Burns is so good. Maybe there's a political, you know, parallel today. I'm going to bring up Citizen Kang, which is in Treehouse of Horror 7 in 1996 by David Cohen. In Citizen Kang, Kang and Kodos, our favorite two aliens in Springfield, come back and abduct Bill Clinton and Bob Dole and take over them both. So essentially in the election, you're voting for either Kang or Kodos, so you're voting for one of the same thing. And Josh, do you know the relationship of Kang and Kodos? I don't know if we know it for sure. Are they siblings?
They are both actually females, and they are sisters.
They are sisters. See, this is why you're on this episode. You know these things. So you're voting for one or the other, Kang or Kodos, and then they reveal it once they've elected one on the steps of the Capitol, and I think Kang is elected, and they reveal themselves and say, you know, it's the same thing either way, and Homer says, I voted for Kodos. Which is amazing. With all the talk this year of is there a difference, and you know, I'll leave that to our listeners to decide, but all the talk in every election as if there's a difference between the two candidates, and lo and behold, the Simpsons say no, they're just the same, Kang and Kodos. And great impressions, by the way, of Bill Clinton and of Bob Dole. I love that Bill Clinton, when they take his clothes off on the ship, says, all right, he's getting happy. He's excited. He doesn't know, you know, he's ready for anything.
this was pre-scandal. That's the thing.
It was.
Boy, did they call that.
They knew. oh, man, they knew about... in Playboy Bill, I love Citizen Kang. I love when The Simpsons does a political parody that hits both sides so well. Yeah. It's the same reason one of my favorite Sideshow Bob episodes is Sideshow Bob Roberts when he runs for mayor.
Yes.
Because it hits him so hard as a Republican, which makes sense because Kelsey Grammer's actually active in the Republican Party, but it also skewers Quimby and the Democratic establishment not doing anything. It's a great episode. So, same reason I love Citizen Kang. What are your thoughts on this one?
It has been a while since I've seen this one. I stopped my studying a little bit before that one. It didn't make my list, unfortunately. But what I remember of it, it is fantastic. Again, the election parody is always a safe place to go. With The Simpsons, with anything really, Political satire is always fun, and I don't know if you've seen it, but there is a video around now. It was made over the summer that featured what the world. It was made by the creators of The Simpsons. The Simpsons-esque video shows what the world would look like if Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton was the president.
I have seen it. It's spot on.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The best line ever is when Bill Clinton answers the phone in the middle of the night and goes, "Hello? Oh, it's for you. Yes, it's always for me now, Bill."
And see, it starts out hitting Hillary, and you think, yeah. Oh, okay, it's going to hit Hillary, and then it goes on 180, and it absolutely destroys Donald Trump.
Of course.
So, in typical Simpson fashion, though, nobody gets out unscathed.
Hashtag vote no for president.
Vote Homer for president.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Actually, what about Ralph Wiggum? Didn't he run for office one time and win the presidency in an election?
I feel like he might have been Vice President Ralph.
Yeah, and he was like, both parties wanted him because he was nice, so people liked him.
Oh, man, I cannot remember.
I know, it's one of the more obscure ones, but it's like Ralph Wiggum of all people, which...
No, it was... There was an episode where Lisa becomes president in the future, and by the way, she's inherited the office after President Donald Trump. But Ralph works for her to some level. I just cannot remember what it is, and I think that could be what you're thinking of, but there could be another one where he's running for some type of office as well. It's possible.
They love using Ralph in political episodes, and it's no accident.
I love that. It was Queen Elizabeth II. I love that Ralph Wiggum. He reminds me of my boy. then it cuts to Prince Charles going, "Dear mummy, my cat's breath smells like cat food." That was possibly the best one moment gag in the Simpsons in the past 10 years, for sure.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
So where do you want to go next, Josh?
Where do I want to go next? I just want to talk about The Simpsons just with no target for a while. No. let's talk about Fly versus Fly.
Oh, yeah.
Treehouse of Horror Volume 8 from 1997. The episode where they get a transporter, Homer buys it at a yard sale, and he uses it for convenience, you know, he sets it up so he can reach into it from the couch, and the other end's at the refrigerator, he just reaches out of here, come back out. He also sets it up next to the toilet so he doesn't have to walk very far to go to the bathroom. But one unfortunate thing that Bart discovered is that if two different species of animal step into the transporter at the same time, they come out with their heads on the opposite species' body. Huh. And hilarity ensues when Bart suddenly has a giant fly head on his regular body and no one seems to notice. Like all Bart does is grabs some syrup and squeezes it on the he just squeezes it on his plate and sucks it up with his proboscis. And then he just grabs the plate like he wants more, so he just bangs the plate on the table. And Marge, who was almost quite possibly the funniest character in all of the Treehouse of Horrors, she just goes, "Bart, mind your manners."
I love how they always use Marge as the straight man in these episodes. It's fantastic. Like, I think Marge is the MVP of Treehouses.
Certainly.
It's...
And if you don't believe that now, listeners, just wait until we talk to a few more... Let's talk about a few more of these.
Oh, man. Well, in that same episode, she's in Easy Bake Coven.
This is true.
Which is great as well. But yeah, I love Fly versus Fly. Oh, man. Buzz. And then Homer goes after Bart with the axe at the end. Yeah. Why, you little? It looks like he's going to destroy the transporter. It looks like he's going to destroy it. And of course, no.
You're going right.
And I love that he buys it at a yard sale from Frank.
Yeah.
It's like, here you go. I wonder how much... the professor from Futurama is based on Frink as an old man.
Oh,
I feel like...
Oh my goodness. He looks like what Frink would look like if he aged to 160.
Yeah.
I never realized that. Also,
I feel like they're related.
Also, if you go back and look at, like in flashbacks, his hairstyle, even though it's red, it still resembles Frink's hairstyle. he still has the big Frink forehead, too.
I just realized it, too, but they've got to be together.
If I'm not mistaken, there is a Simpsons and Futurama crossover, pretty recent, where they do work together to solve a problem. Now, a lot of things happen. First, Homer and Bender become best friends.
Of course they do.
If I'm not mistaken, I believe that Professor Frink... Yeah, it was. I think it was last year's Treehouse of Horror. Professor Frink and... No, it wasn't Jurassic Horror, but yeah, Professor Frink and Professor Farnsworth, they do work together.
So I think that's intentional.
Yes, I would agree.
Oh, man. Fly versus Fly. That's a great one.
Yeah, it is a great one.
And it's underrated, I think. It's not often brought up in the list of best ones, so I'm really glad you did.
Yeah, I like mine, you know. that's my goal. In the show notes, you have all the great ones listed, and I just wanted to add a few more in there that I thought were underrated, and I'm fine being in that position.
You know, so speaking of ones that I think get a lot of credit, and to tie back into what I said earlier about the segment that really stretches the show's abilities, I'm going to go to Trials of Horror 7 again, or Trials of Horror 6, I should say, in 1995, and talk about Homer Cube, or Homer 3, to the third power, Homer 3D. It is one of the most obvious Twilight Zone parodies, because they actually, Homer says, "This reminds me of that Twilight show with the Zone."
About Zone.
And if you don't remember this one, it's the one where Homer finds that the back of a wall in the living room actually is a portal to a three-dimensional world where Homer is computer-generated on a grid. It came out the same year, I believe, as Toy Story.
It did. I was actually going to say that if you weren't.
So it's the early stages of it. And one of the best gags of the whole thing is Homer just stands around on the grid and says, "Me doing nothing is probably costing a lot of money. I'm going to make the most out of it," and burps. But of course, you get the scientists involved. You get the old school diving suit to try to get him out. And Bart eventually ends up in the 3D world. And eventually, the gag of the episode at the end is that Homer does escape, but he escapes to the real world and falls into a dumpster in Hollywood. And I think he passes by a bakery.
Yes, he does. Not just any bakery. Ooh, erotic cakes. Meanwhile, everyone he passes by on the street is looking back at him like, "What in the world is that?" Other people follow him into the erotic cake shop, too, just to see who this guy is.
Yeah. And, and later animated shows have done something similar to this. South Park has done an episode similar. Mm-hmm. Family Guy has done an episode similar. Road to the Multiverse.
Right.
But as both of those shows have said, The Simpsons did it first.
Absolutely.
And maybe best. I love Homer Cubed. I will say it's not a particular scary segment. A lot of the treehouses are actually legitimately have a few scares, or at least similar scares. Nothing like that in Homer Cubed. But when it came out, it was so big and such a big thing to see on television. I remember I actually didn't watch The Simpsons at that age. My parents didn't let me watch it. But this segment was covered on the news because it was so groundbreaking for animated television.
Right, right. Just like Toy Story was groundbreaking for animated films.
Yeah, exactly. So what are your memories of Homer Cubed?
Homer Cubed, it's so absurd the way that he just destroys the world because there was a cone moving around that pokes him in the butt. He gets mad at it and throws it, and then that just causes the world to get destroyed. Why? But again, it's the absurd Simpson.
Well, he causes essentially a black hole, right?
Correct.
With the grid falling. And strangely enough, having studied a little bit of physics, that's a pretty accurate description of what happens to space-time in a black hole.
Yeah,
I agree. So, well done to The Simpsons. It's not intentional, but The Simpsons is often educational, even when they don't want to be, because their writers are SOSMRT.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, Homer 3D. The first time I saw this episode, it still blew my mind. It was just... Yeah. What an idea. And the execution is flawless. It wouldn't work if the execution wasn't as good as it is.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, of course, the modeling has changed a little bit, but if you played Simpsons Hit and Run, our recommendation, the Homer in that game doesn't look all that different from the Homer in this episode, and that game came out 6 or 7 years later.
This is true.
So, well done.
So, what do we want to talk about next?
There's so many good ones, Josh, that it is your turn to pick one.
So, if you want to talk about Twilight Zone references, that Twilighty show about the Zone, you have to mention the early Oakley Weinstein masterpiece on The Simpsons that was Terror at 5.5 Feet.
Yes! What a choice!
Oh, yes. It is a pretty much spot on reenactment of one of the greatest Twilight Zone episodes of all time, which also features William Shatner. Most people know him as the really bad actor that played a starship captain, but he also is a really bad actor that played a passenger freaking out in an airplane.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, actually, he was fantastic.
Yeah.
You have to overact to play that role.
Isn't that what the Twilight Zone is about sometimes?
Sometimes it is. Oh, man. Yeah, so Bart has a premonition before waking up that morning of not just that he was going to die on the way to school, but of exactly how he was going to die on the way to school. And it involved the back left tire of the school bus falling off and the bus careening into oncoming traffic and smacking head on with a semi. But what you don't know is what leads up to it and what causes that to happen. And then all of a sudden, as Bart is riding on the bus, he sees a little gremlin thing on the side of the bus, destroying it, clawing into the sides, pulling wires, you know, cutting brake lines, all of that stuff. And as he goes to alert people, just like William Shatner's character on Twilight Zone did when he saw that creature on the wing, when he goes to alert people about it, he disappears before anyone else can look out the window and see. So he starts being labeled as crazy, and they have to essentially BS some reason why Principal Skinner was on the bus with them too. And Principal Skinner at one point got him tied down to his seat so that he wouldn't ever be able to look out the window again because he's crazy. And they made it all the way to their destination, even though Bart eventually started climbing out of the window and they were working so hard pulling them back in. The bus made it all the way to its destination. So Bart at some point tricks another person sitting next to him on the bus to untie him so that then he can grab some road flares, light them, climb out of the window with Groundskeeper Willie and Principal Skinner trying to pull him back in. He ends up knocking the gremlin off of the side of the bus with one of those lit road flares right before he could take the last lug nut off of that right of that left rear tire that was going to fall off and cause them all to die on the bus. And even though he did all that, still no one ever believed him that that creature was out there until they actually stopped, got off the bus, and saw the damage on the side of it, just like in the Twilight Zone where it was revealed that he was right the whole time. Mm-hmm. So that is probably one of the most accurate Twilight Zone reenactments that I've ever seen.
And doesn't Ned show up and adopt the creature? Or some yes. Sort of like takes him in?
Yes, he does. And so then as Bart is, you know, being sent to the crazy house, because the Simpsons do have to put that twist on the end of it to make it end differently. As Bart's being taken to the crazy house in the ambulance, all of a sudden that creature shows back up holding Ned's severed head in his arm. But yes, you are right about Ned. One of the greatest lines in that entire story is when Ned goes, "Aw, you're just some hideous monster. Come here, you."
You know, that whole treehouse, though, Treehouse of Horror 4, it right? starts with the most iconic Ned segment of all, the devil and Homer Simpson.
Absolutely.
Which I think even to this day might be the most iconic Ned appearance in a treehouse episode.
Oh, yeah. Ned is the devil. Iconic and ironic.
You should recite the line from that one. What is Homer so salivating over?
Forbidden donut.
Oh, that one's fantastic. And then, of course, Homer becomes a donut.
Yes, at the very end of it.
Oh, that one's great. But Terror at 5.5 feet is, I think you're right, it's the best parody of a Twilight Zone episode they've done.
I think so.
And only thing that would have made it better would have been if the gremlin was voiced by William Shatner.
Yeah, you're right.
But
or if he just made some type of guest appearance.
Yeah, truly this is a disturbing segment. No. So speaking of segments that could be disturbing, well, that could be all of them, of course, but I am going to bring up, I think we have time for one more for each of us, and I know which one you're going to bring up.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure. So I am going to bring in from Treehouse of Horror 6, also the same one as Homer Cubed, the first segment, Attack of the 50-Foot Eyesores.
Yes.
I love this idea that all of the giant advertising, you know, big creatures are going to come to life and start fighting and going crazy. It starts with Mr. Lard Lad, I believe. Lard Lad, yes. Donuts. And then it just goes crazy from there. You got a giant cowboy mascot wreaking havoc. And I don't know exactly if this came before or after Honey, I Blew Up the Kid. But there's a similar kind of feel to it. And I love the fact, if I remember correctly, the music of Neil Sedaka is what ends it? Or it's the music of somebody. Paul Anka. Paul Anka. Starts singing his songs, and that's what ends this entire thing. Because, of course, in a Treehouse story, it's going to be resolved in the most crazy, asinine, yet still perfect way. And that's how it does it. It's almost similar to how Mars Attacks ends, where they have one song that blows up the brains of all of the aliens. The Simpsons did it first.
Right.
Yeah, and of course it all starts because Homer wants a freaking donut.
Yeah, he steals Lard Lad's giant donut, and that's what starts this whole big thing. That's just so fantastic. I do not know what the actual execution is a reference to, but I feel like Attack of the 50-Foot Eyesores, at least the title, is a reference to a very, very obscure cult classic, Attack of the 50-Foot Woman.
Oh, yeah, I've seen posters of that film. That is a really obscure, it's one of those, like, B-movie horror films from the 50s, right? Like The Blob?
Yeah.
Yeah, that, wow. Leave it to The Simpsons to find that sort of a reference.
Oh, yeah.
And I should say, of course, that I mentioned Homer 3D and Attack of the 50-Foot Eyesores. The middle segment, which is Nightmare on Evergreen Terrace, is also a classic.
Oh, yeah, where, definitely. You know,
where Willy is basically becomes Freddy Krueger. But I think Willy has a better role in another episode, which is why I picked the two that I did. But overall, I think Treehouse of Horror 6 is one of the best in total. I think one other episode might be better as a unit. But it's great.
It is. I agree. And confirmed, it is a spoof of the 1958 film Attack of the 50-Foot Woman.
There you go. If that was made today, it should be played by Jennifer Lawrence, because everyone is played by Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah, pretty much.
A 50-foot woman tries to sell a mop. No.
or it could be played by Taylor Swift. The 50-foot woman is a mop.
Well, literally, I knew she was trouble when she walked in and crushed everyone, so...
Yeah. Wow, that was good. Oh, man, Josh.
Well, you got to shake it off and give us your next pick.
All right, so, let's do it.
The last pick of the night, make it a good one. What is it, Josh?
You can't talk about Treehouse of Horror without bringing up The Shining. And first off, I just want to say, Treehouse of Horror 5 is quite possibly the best Treehouse of Horror threesome there. Just with the quality of all three of the stories involved.
Yes.
I would have to say easily it is the best episode. Since we're talking about, you know, the best story, we also got to talk about The Shining, and it's just so fantastic from start to bottom. It's a masterpiece of comedy all the way through. Tuesday. Wow, it was a long drive, but we're almost there. Homer, did you remember to lock the front door?
Don't!
Wednesday. Well, it was two long drives, but we're almost there. Homer, when you locked the front door, did you remember to lock the back door?
Don't!
Thursday. They're just driving in dead silence. Lisa says, oh no, we forgot Grandpa at the gas station. And no one cares. From that point on, you're hooked, and it just keeps getting better.
There's not a single wasted moment in The Shining.
No, not at all.
This is a Bob Cushel segment, and what a job he did.
Yes.
What's your favorite moment in the Shining?
My favorite moment, it has to be at the very end when he finally gets his hands on some TV. Because, you know, no TV and no beer make a home or something, something.
Something, something. Go crazy?
Don't mind if I do. But probably my favorite moment. This is not in any way the funniest line from that. But my favorite moment is at the end when he finally gets the TV and he's just sitting there in the snow, like watching TV, urge to kill family, fading, fading, rising, fading. Come on, kids. Come sit down with Daddy in the snow and watch TV.
Oh, man.
It's a show you can quote all day. Oh my goodness, he typed something on the typewriter. It should be a window into his soul. Oh, lots of relief, feeling fine. Then lightning strikes, and you see no TV and no beer make Homer go crazy, just written all over the room.
Is this the best use of Willie? I mean, this is a fantastic use of Willie.
Oh, yeah.
You can't call it that. Do you want to get sued?
Yeah, and that sets up for his appearance in all three stories in Treehouse of Horror 5, where he ends up taking an axe to the back at some point.
In all of them.
Yes, in all of them.
And I gotta say, though, I think we might agree that Marge steals the show in this segment. You know, I think you know which line I'm talking about.
Absolutely. Lisa asks her, is Dad going to kill us? And Marge just goes, well, I guess we're just going to have to wait and see.
As someone, I saw a YouTube review of Treehouses of Horror, and of course they had The Shining near the top of the list, and they said that line needs to be in every horror film, because it's just exactly how they act. Is Freddy Krueger going to kill us? We're just going to have to wait and see.
But another well thought out gag, though, was where he does, you know, Jack Nicholson's character in The Shining, you know, chops through the door with the axe, sticks his head through and yells, "Here's Johnny." I loved what they did with that part. Or Homer chops through the door, sticks his head through, and yells, "Here's Johnny!" And it's an empty room. Then he chops down another door, sticks his head through, and yells, "David Letterman!" At that point, Grandpa, who is just arriving at the house, goes, "Hey, David, I'm Grandpa!" And then the part that tops it all off is when he chops through the third door where the rest of the family is, and he just goes, "I'm Mike Wallace, I'm Morley Safer, and I'm Ed Bradley. All this plus Andy Rooney tonight on 60 Minutes."
Ah! To be fair, Andy Rooney was a frightening man.
Yes, it was.
I mean, those rants were nothing short of vitriolic.
Yeah. You know where I would never want to have to deal with Andy Rooney, God bless him, if I was taking back a return at a store from him.
Did you consider how returning this object will ruin the economy and Americans? Because I'm Andy Rooney, and this is customer service.
Yeah. No, I was talking about being the guy working behind the customer service desk.
Oh, my God.
Trying to accept the return from him.
No, it doesn't have a time bomb inside it. I don't know what you're talking about. There's not a hidden camera where we can take pictures of you in compromising the show.
Oh, goodness. Oh,
God bless Andy Rooney.
Yes. So before we go to our final choice of what we think is the best of each one, are there any other quotes or moments or anything that you really appreciated from at any point in the Treehouse of Horror series.
Oh, I love a lot of the moments in them. I really like Ned becoming a werewolf in the I Know What You Diddly Italy Did. That's a classic.
Of course.
I love when Frank becomes essentially his own Frankenstein, taking people's parts. That one's a great one. And, right. You know, of course, I'm looking forward to the one coming out this year. I think that my favorite thing that's not really in a particular episode, I love the opening statements of the treehouses in the early years, where they warn people that it's going to be scarier, bloody, more violent. But the segment that's warning you of this is usually the most violent segment of the whole show.
Yeah, absolutely.
The first year, it was legitimately an actual warning. Marge comes through a curtain and says, you know, I know we come on at an early time, so please don't watch it if you have kids around. So the first time it was actually a warning, and then Leave It to the Simpsons, and the next few times just go crazy with it. I think one year they were in some sort of medieval torture chamber where they're warning you about it, and of course one year they're all in a cemetery.
And they did eventually stop the warning altogether.
Yeah, they did, but I loved the warning. It was a great wraparound for the whole show.
Season 3, well, 2004-2's warning is probably the best of them all, or Mara's just like, oh, I told you last time, don't, you know, put your kids to bed, but you didn't listen. But seriously, this one's even worse. So please, tuck your kids. You know, you didn't listen to me last year. You're not going to listen to me this year.
Oh, man. Yeah, I love that part because it's so self-referential, which is one of the best things about the Simpsons.
Yes.
You know, well done.
Yeah. So other
and also, one thing I should point out, the Genesis tub, which is in Treehouse of Horror 7, where Lisa creates a colony on a tooth. I love it as a science fiction story, but again, the Simpsons did it better. South Park ended up doing a parody of this, and Star Trek Voyager did this as a whole episode, and since we're the Star Trek team of B&Q, we can point that out.
Yes.
Voyager actually did it decently enough, but you shouldn't be basing an episode on The Simpsons.
And we'll just bring this one home by saying, in the spirit of true self-reference, Futurama did it in almost a full episode format.
That's true, yeah. So it's been around for a while, that idea, but the execution of it in the Genesis tub is great because Bart's the devil, and of course he is. Of course he is.
Yeah, of course he is.
You know, why not? Because in the treehouses, Bart's always mischievous, but in the treehouses, I think he becomes sometimes outright evil.
Yes.
Is that fair to say?
I think so, especially in his nightmare from Treehouse of Horror 2, the Bart zone.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And his treatment of Hugo in The Thing and I. So
yeah, which of course a very fitting plot twist there. Bart turned out to actually be the evil twin.
You know, the scar is always on the left side. No. I can't do a Hibbert laugh, otherwise I would add that in right here. But parts of the element that you think just stand out as iconic.
there's so many good ones. When Family Guy first came out, they started really enjoying taking shots back and forth against one another. And in the 2002 special, this is after Family Guy had gotten canceled, so it was you know, being it was adding insult to injury at this point. But Send In the Clones was the episode where Homer kept cloning himself to give to allow like less intelligent versions of himself to. To do his more menial tasks while he got to have all the fun. And so he started overdoing it with the clones, and they were all just standing out in a field together, and one of them was Peter Griffin.
Didn't they do that as well in a Sideshow Bob episode? They have a like wanted criminals, and they have Peter Griffin, and it's a plagiarissimo. And then they have Stan Smith from American Dad, and it says plagiarissimo di plagiarissimo.
Yes, you're right. You're
plagiarism
right.
Of plagiarism. So.
You're right. I forgot about that.
All in good fun, but
another one coming from Treehouse of Horror 17, Married to the Blob, the one where Homer becomes the giant blob that just wants to eat everything, and he ends up getting coaching from Dr. Phil. And And then Mr. and Mrs. Simpson from the later ones as well.
That's a classic, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Very, very good remake of Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
That's the same episode as Heck House, which I love too. Great use of Ned in a modern house.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even though a lot of the episodes we picked today were older, Treehouse of Horror still stand up.
Yeah.
You know, the people who say The Simpsons is gone, not funny anymore, they must not be watching the same show I'm watching, because I still find it one of the best shows. You know?
I agree, of course. I mean, I'm a huge Simpsons fan, and I have been for most of my life. But I think, first off, I agree with people who are saying that, you know, after 28 seasons, it's hard to come up with stuff that was as good as it was in the first few. And I'll support that all day. But yeah,
I mean, the first few are the best.
Yes.
But there's still quality programming.
Yes.
It's not, people think that it's just gone totally off a cliff. And I don't think that's a fair assessment. I think especially the past few seasons have been a resurgence, not quite to the original level, but certainly back to like season 2 or season 8. You know, well done to the writers. They've really done a lot of great things lately, especially making it more topical. Kind of like the segment that was released over the summer.
Yeah, and I think one of the best things that they've ever done is just realize that because the show has gone on for so many years and no one has ever aged, that they cannot keep a consistent timeline. Like, sure, Bart was technically born in 1980, but Bart's not 36 right now.
No.
So they will have flashbacks that just destroy the consistency of their timeline almost just for that purpose. Like, they went back in time to the late 90s where Bart and Lisa were just toddlers and they went to the Grand Canyon.
You know, and they intentionally are blowing up canon in that way, but they've done a really good job not destroying character canon.
Correct.
I think they separate timeline from characters. So, for example, they're never going to change Homer and Marge's meet cute in the school.
Right.
That's always going to be the time when that happened may change, but they're never going to change that, I don't think. I hope they don't. But they will change the times to fit it. But that doesn't take away from episodes like, I don't know, remember the title of it, but where Homer does it for Maggie. Do it for her.
Oh, man.
I
one
love
of the
that
best
episode.
Endings ever.
It doesn't change the potency of that episode, even if it's backdated a little bit. It doesn't at all.
Yeah. That episode is called And Maggie Makes Three. It is season 6, episode 13.
What an episode.
Oh, yeah.
And I think maybe we could do an episode later on the best Simpsons flashback, because there's so many good ones.
Yeah.
You know?
Including the ones that intentionally destroy their canon.
Absolutely. Like, I love when we go and see Abe in World War II. I love those episodes.
Oh, yeah.
He's always done something incredibly crazy.
Oh, yes.
Didn't he serve with Burns at one point, I think?
Yeah. Yeah, that was when they were in the Hellfish. I can't remember the full name of that unit. But they had found all that art. All that priceless art, and whoever just survived the longest out of all of them got to keep all that art as their own. Yeah.
Which is, of course, a reference to the Magnificent Men, I think maybe it was what it was called. Monuments Men. The Monuments. Or it's a real thing where they found the art. But, of course, in the real history, it was turned over to the proper authorities as best we know.
Well, and that's what happened in the episode, too. It got turned over to the descendant of the rightful owner.
Yeah, so that, again, The Simpsons will stick to the truth more often than people think.
Yeah.
Because it's stranger than fiction. So now that, so let's go ahead and wrap this Halloween special up with our picks for the best Treehouse segment. And Josh, I'll let you have the floor first.
Ah, man, I could lie to myself all day and pick something other than this, but at the end of the day, I got to be true to myself and say my favorite one of all time is The Shinning.
You can't go wrong with The Shinning. I mean, it is one of the most iconic segments in the history of The Simpsons, and that's a 27-year history.
Yes.
Over 600 episodes at this point, and you can't go wrong with The Shinning. And it's interesting that of all of the different all of the years that they've done this, we're choosing segments from the same episode, but not the same segment. Because my favorite is the one that I introduced with, Time and Punishment. I love the takeoff and the Sound of Thunder. I love the science fiction elements. I love the random Maggie James Earl Jones segment. It's probably my favorite segment in The Simpsons. What an episode. And together with The Shinning and Nightmare Cafeteria, which we didn't talk about, but is a great one on its own.
Right.
I think it's the weakest of the three of that particular episode, but it's still amazingly well constructed. What an episode. I think this proves not only do you have The Shinning and Time and Punishment as our two nominees for the best treehouse, but they're in the same episode.
Yes.
So I think we can both agree definitively that Treehouse of Horror 5 from 1994 is the best Treehouse episode.
Oh, I'll say that 100%. I'm very excited to see what they bring, considering that it just so happens that their 600th episode is going to be a Treehouse of Horror. I will be intentionally ambiguous about what day we're recording this, but
we haven't seen it yet, but it's coming out very soon. So
yes.
So yeah, I'm super excited. There's got to be some callbacks since episode 600. So
oh yeah,
you know, maybe we'll see a character we haven't seen in a long time, like Bleeding Gums. Who knows?
They can bring him back to life.
It's a treehouse. They can do anything they want.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, who knows? Maybe we'll see. I'd like to see Ned be able to, like, communicate with the ghost of Edna to close that storyline. But I know they can't really use Edna Krabappel anymore.
No.
You know, they shouldn't. But I feel bad for the character of Ned, because they've finally given him hope, and then something so tragic happens in the real world that takes that away.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. You know, you can't really fix that. But, you know, she was an amazing actress, and we were sad to see her go, of course. But sad to see the character go as well, because Edna Krabappel was always great for a laugh.
Oh, yeah.
But it just figures two of the only characters that have died permanently in the show were the two love interests of Ned Flanders.
All right, and it's a pretty small list of characters that have died permanently. The only other ones I can think of off the top of my head are Krusty's dad recently, but also Bleeding Gums Murphy and Dr. Marvin Monroe.
And they retired all of Phila Hartman's characters as well.
Yeah, they didn't
but
all
they
have
didn't
to die. Yeah,
they
just disappeared.
Retired. Yeah, like Lionel Hutz and Troy McClure.
Yeah, but Lionel Hutz comes and goes enough that he could just, you know, never come back, and that'd be fine.
Troy McClure's the same way. But yeah, those characters actually died. And I think you're right. Krusty's dad is the most recent one.
So Dr. Marvin Monroe's death was confirmed during the 138th episode Spectacular, but it is never really revealed how he died.
They just kind of retired the character, and then they decided that he was dead.
Yeah, yeah.
It's strange, though, because he was such a big part of the early seasons.
Oh, yeah.
And then he just disappears.
Back when they actually were making some effort to correct the dysfunction of their family. Yeah.
Yeah. And they ended up electrocuting themselves. Oh, well. Yes. But so we have The Shining and Time and Punishment, and those are our two picks for the best two segments. But listeners, we know you have a favorite. It might be one of ours, but it might be another. Maybe you love Citizen Kang. Maybe you love Fly versus Fly the most. Maybe you love one of the more recent ones that we didn't talk about in this episode. Please let us know. We really want to hear from you on this one. Our Twitter is at BNQPodcast. Our email address is bnqfeedback@gmail.com, as well as bignerdyquestions@gmail.com. Send us your feedback. If you send us your favorite with a brief explanation, we'll read it on the air, and Josh and I will talk about it, because that's what we do here at B&Q.
Oh, yeah.
And I know that we're going to revisit The Simpsons and the works of Matt Groening in later episodes because, well, it's some of the best work ever produced in comedy and animation.
Certainly.
So we're definitely going to be coming back to it. But for now, we do have one order of business left. Josh, would you like to kill our friend, or would you like me to kill off your bank?
Oh, man. You go ahead. I want to hear what you have.
All righty. This week, Jar Jar Binks was going through Coruscant when he came upon a 50-foot-high statue of a Jedi. The Jedi came to life in a freak storm because C-3PO had stolen his lightsaber. And as the Jedi statue was walking off, his sandal crushed Jar Jar Binks into a Gungan puddle on the side of the street.
Wow.
Yes, Jar Jar is dead, but The Simpsons will live forever. Eat my shorts, B&Q out.